I'll invite you to just stay seated for our reading for today, because before we get in, I want to remind us a bit of where we have been in the book of Ruth. So Naomi comes back to Israel from the land of Moab with her daughter-in-law, a Moabite woman named Ruth. Now, Naomi and her family had left Israel because there was a famine in the land. Her two sons married Moabite women, and then all three men in the story, Naomi's husband and two sons, die. And they leave, when they die, they leave the women, Naomi and Ruth, in a pretty vulnerable spot. Ultimately, Naomi and Ruth return to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest, which was at the end of chapter 1. And that's that time of great possibility, right? There's a barley harvest. It's the first harvest of the year. So Ruth goes out to glean the leftover grain from the field of a man named Boaz, who is related to the family that she married into. We'll hear that Boaz is a kinsman of Naomi's deceased father-in-law, Elimelech. Now, in the original Hebrew language this was written in, kinsman, the word that's translated kinsman, can also mean one who redeems or one who makes right. Now, the reason for this is when a husband dies, the widow would then be married to a next of kin, a brother, a father, someone else in the family. And this was exclusively for protection. Right, this was for protection and inclusion from being exposed to that kind of vulnerability that Naomi and Ruth were exposed to. So when we hear about Boaz as a kinsman in our reading today, it's the author trying to remind us of the possibility for redemption for Ruth and Naomi. And that comes to play into play for our reading for today. So this is a reading from Ruth chapter 3. It's kind of nice when you do a four-week series on a book that has four chapters, because you always know where you are, right? So our third week, we are firmly rooted in chapter 3 for today. So this is a reading from Ruth 3, beginning with verse 1. Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, I need to seek some security for you so that it may be well with you. Now here is our kinsman, Boaz, with whose young women you have been working. See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now wash and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." She said to her, "All that you tell me, I will do." So Ruth went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had instructed her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and was in a contented mood, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came quietly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and there, lying at his feet, was a woman. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your cloak over your servant, for you are next of kin." A couple of notes about what we've read so far. Verse 3, this washing and anointing or perfuming yourself, donning one's best clothes, was known in this culture for a couple of different things. In 2 Samuel, we hear that it is usually done as a way of symbolizing the end of a period of mourning. That after a period of mourning has finished, one dons their best clothes, washes, and anoints oneself, which could come into play here in Ruth's story, right? We also hear in the prophet Ezekiel that is a preparation of a bride for a wedding. Right, so these are the two times for Ruth's audience, for the people hearing this story, these are the two things, the end of a period of mourning and preparing as a bride for a wedding, that would come into their minds when they hear that Ruth had washed and anointed and perfumed oneself, donning one's best clothes. And I think Ruth calls on both of these references as a way of telling us as readers that both are true for Ruth, right? This is a simultaneous end of a period of mourning and the beginning of something new. Now, there's lots of layers to what is happening in this scene, and a lot of people interpret them differently. For our purposes, we'll take them at face value and say, seek the things that we know to be true. Right? We know that there's a huge party happening. Right? This place that has been through drought and famine now has an abundant harvest that the workers have just finished processing. And at the end of harvest, that sigh of relief, right? Anyone who has been a part of harvesting crops knows that sigh of relief at the end of a harvest. Ruth comes up to Boaz as he sleeps on the hay and tells him to spread his cloak over her, for they are next of kin. Right? In the system of that day, this is essentially a proposal for marriage. Right? We are next of kin. Spread your cloak over me. And here's how Boaz responds. This is starting at verse 10. He says, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. This last instance of your loyalty is better than the first. You have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not be afraid. I will do for you all that you ask. For all the assembly of my people know that you are a worthy woman." This is the Hebrew phrase, eshet shayil, which means woman of valor, and is repeated as oftentimes in the Hebrew scriptures as just one of the highest compliments for a woman. "But now, though it is true that I am a near kinsman, there is another kinsman more closely related than I. Remain this night, and in the morning, if he will act as next of kin for you, good. Let him do so. If he is not willing to act as next of kin for you, then as the Lord lives, I will act as next of kin for you. Lie down until the morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before one person could recognize another. For he said, "It must not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Then he said, "Bring the cloak you are wearing and hold it out." So she held it. And he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her back. And then he went into the city. She came to her mother-in-law, who said, "How did things go with you, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, for he said, 'Do not go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We continue to see and celebrate the book of Ruth for exactly what it is. It's a powerful story of belonging across all kinds of difference. In the book of Ruth, we see the grit and grace of a woman determined to make a way for herself and those whom she loves. In this case, Ruth doing everything she can to make a way for her and Naomi, to whom she's devoted. In Boaz, we see a wealthy landowner aware of Ruth and Naomi's vulnerabilities, and one who is willing to share their place and use his power and privilege in ways that offers protection and a path forward so that they would not just survive, but so that they would have life and have life abundantly. One of the key words that we've been focusing in on in the book of Ruth is this Hebrew word hesed, which translates as loving kindness or steadfastness or faithfulness. And we see this trait in spades in Ruth and Naomi and in Boaz. In chapter 2, Ruth found refuge under the wings of the God of Israel. Right? This was Boaz's blessing to her. But now Ruth hopes to find refuge in relationship and in community with others. It's one thing to know that we are loved and welcomed by God, but it is another grace entirely to be assured that we are loved and welcomed in community as well. If I'm being honest, it's Ruth's hope that I've been carrying with me in these days and weeks following a divisive election, preparing for the time ahead where emotions are all over. It's the way that Boaz fully embodies this kind of loving kindness, this steadfastness, this faithfulness with and for Ruth. And in the way that Ruth fully embodies this kind of steadfastness and faithfulness for Naomi, that provides a way forward. Padre Gotuma is a poet who wrote a commentary on the book of Ruth, and he talks about how these acts of loving kindness don't just stop at the kind of interpersonal level, but they have ripples, right? They ripple out beyond us and out into the world. He writes this. I have the next slide up there. He says, these acts of chesed are most particularly kind acts that are done despite obvious differences and which we're not obligated to perform. In the Jewish tradition, chesed, this kind of faithfulness, steadfastness, loving kindness, is a vital contribution to what's called tikkun olam, or the repairing of the world. Right? That the chesed, the steadfastness, the kindness, the faithfulness, that those are vital components that aren't just between two people. That's where they may start, but they have ways of rippling out and can actually bring about the repair of the world. That's why these acts of steadfast kindness and mercy are important, not only because it's something nice to do, not only because it helps and is kind for our neighbor, but because it has the power to repair a broken world. We see the breaks in our world, right? We see the cracks. We see the fault lines that separate families and communities in our country and our world. Without the presence of grace and kindness, those cracks will only keep growing. The fault lines keep creating more damage. One of my favorite authors, Parker Palmer, once wrote that violence is what happens when we don't know what else to do with our suffering. Violence is what happens when we don't know what else to do with our suffering. And that sticks with me because I think so much of our division is actually about the real suffering that we just don't want to talk about or we don't know how to name. As followers of Jesus, we respond to suffering. We respond to the violence and division that can grow from it with concrete acts of mercy and kindness. This is the big idea of the church. That in the end, grace and mercy will always overcome violence and division. That's the Easter story, right? The grace and love of God triumphs over the powers of sin and death, period. I wonder if the book of Ruth and this kind of lived out, embodied, active way of loving kindness is a way that we can celebrate Little Easters every day. I wonder if showing mercy and kindness to those who are different from us is actually how we partner with God in repairing the world. I love how Padre Gotuma describes the ways we can share God's abundant kindness toward us in ways that can bring healing and hope. He writes this. He says, kindness is never naive about how the world is. It's a choice to love in the face of division. Kindness is courage lived out. Kindness subverts divisions by bringing in those who everyone else seeks to keep out and reaches out to those who others wish to keep at arm's length. Kindness is never constrained by the rules and laws. It never changes the rules and laws, but seeks to change us. Kindness acts for the benefit of others and never for ourselves or our institutions. Kindness sees beyond divisions of ethnicity or politics or religion and seeks the common good through love and service. Beloved, this is where we can place our hope. Not in our own abilities to be kind, but in the abundant kindness and mercy that God extends to us, extends through us and out into the world. Not only to help ease people's suffering, but to break the chains of every system of power that keeps us from loving God and from loving our neighbor. And it's for that hope that we can indeed say thanks be to God. Amen. At this time,